headlines, Iran says France is destabilizing the Persian Gulf region after Paris signed a record 14 billion euro deal to sell Rafale fighter jets to the United Arab Emirates. Police in Sudan fire tear gas as thousands of protesters rally against the October military coup and the country's military-dominated government. And Italy and Poland will tighten restrictions on people unvaccinated against COVID-19, as Germany plans to make vaccination compulsory for some jobs. Well, welcome to the studios from the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. France is under fire for its recent arms deal with the United Arab Emirates that is part of a Saudi-led coalition waging a devastating war in Yemen. Now Iran says such weapon sales by the European nation are aimed at destabilizing the Persian Gulf region.
The militarization of our region is unacceptable. Billions of euros worth of advanced weapons, which European countries such as France sell to the Persian Gulf Arab nations, is the source of turmoil, including a devastating war on the defenseless Yemeni people. This process is irresponsible and destructive. We must not forget the destructive and destabilizing role countries such as France play in this regard.
Khatibzadeh also slammed what he called the European countries' double standards when it comes to Iran's defense program. He said they condemn Iran for its missile program, but continue delivering lethal arms to some of the regional states. Earlier this month, the UAE and France signed a 14 billion euro arms deal that will see Abu Dhabi acquiring 80 Rafale fighter jets and 12 military helicopters. Rights groups have condemned the deal and have urged Paris to stop the weapons sales. Geopolitical analyst Hania Tarkian says conflicts in the West Asian region help arms manufacturers in Europe and the U.S. to reap huge benefits by selling their products.
It's, of course, there is pressure from the weapons companies because they are very active in the U.S. And also in Europe is the same. I mean, we have the same problem. We have companies which produce weapons in Italy, in France. We have just talked about this. And so they have to sell what they produce. They have no choice, so they need wars. But as I said, on the other hand, we must remember also that there are some other ideological interests as well. So they want in the Middle East, they want to be not just wars, but also to be a state of destabilization. So people in the Middle East, they have to continue to fight each other. This is what they want also for economical reasons, but also for ideological interests.
Iran's prime minister has condemned the presence of all foreign forces deployed to Syria without coordination with the country's government.
The Islamic Republic of Iran condemns the presence of foreign forces in Syria, which is without coordination with the central government, elected by the vote of the Syrian people, and considers this military presence as harmful to regional peace and security.
Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the comments in a joint presser with his Syrian counterpart Faisal Miqdad in Tehran. The top Iranian diplomat also denounced Israeli strikes on Syria, stressing that the regime is the root cause of insecurity in the region. Amir Abdullahian also described mutual relations with Syria as strategic. He said that Tehran has a comprehensive plan for the reconstruction of the country. The top diplomat also called for closer trade cooperation with Syria, under what he called its new circumstances. He said that Iran is ready to export technical and engineering services to the Arab country. Faisal Miqdad has also met with the Iranian president and discussed bilateral ties. Tehran and the parties to the 2015 nuclear deal have held seven rounds of talks this year to resolve outstanding issues. Iran offered two documents of the most recent discussions, which ended on Friday. But the European members, namely Germany, Britain, and France, have stated that Iran's demands are in violation of the nuclear deal's terms. The U.S. has also expressed the same. Iran, on the other hand, says it is adhering to the text of the previous rounds, but has expanded on issues like verification of sanctions removal.
This year, Tehran and the remaining parties to the 2015 nuclear agreement have undertaken seven rounds of negotiations to settle unresolved concerns. The most recent round of discussions concluded on Friday in Vienna, Austria. In the discussions, Tehran has repeatedly indicated that it wants all the U.S. sanctions lifted. Sanctions placed by the U.S. on Iran when Washington unilaterally withdrew from the agreement in 2018. Tehran has also consistently criticized the United States for its attitude to the nuclear deal known as the JCPOA. Tehran says that before discussing Iran's nuclear responsibilities under the accord, Washington must fulfill its promise to remove all anti-Iran sanctions. In an interview with ANSA, an Italian news agency, Iran's deputy foreign minister, Ali Barghadikani, stated that the Islamic Republic will not back down from its demand for the removal of sanctions against the Iranian nation. Barghadikani noted that Washington should take the first step because it was the party that quit the accord in 2018. Barghadikani is also the top Iranian negotiator in the talks over the removal of sanctions. He spoke about the draft documents Tehran presented during the latest round of negotiations in Vienna this week. Barghadi said the proposals are logical and well-founded and could be a basis for further talks. At the seventh round of negotiations in Vienna, Tehran offered its plans of action to members of the P4+1 in the form of two suggested draft documents, one relating to the removal of oppressive and unlawful U.S. sanctions, and the other to the nuclear issue. Meanwhile, the United Kingdom, France, and Germany, all signatories to the nuclear deal, have raised concern over Iran's demands, claiming that they violate the provisions of the agreement. Iran yet denies this, saying it is adhering to the text of the previous rounds, but has expanded on issues like verification of sanctions removal.
Well, it's a problem because this is not simply a rational process. The other side, effectively, is a bloc of NATO countries that are involved in a series of wars in this West Asian region, and they are desperate to hang on to some new pretext, or this was an important pretext for them to try and submit Iran, to try and constrain the regional influence of Iran. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the nuclear issue at all, but as you can see, they've been trying to add new matters of trying to control Iran's missile capacity and so on. So,
as an informed source acquainted with the discussions told Press TV, the Islamic Republic's suggested drafts are fully compliant with the JCPOA and its principles. In an interview with Doha-based Al Jazeera on Friday, Iran's senior negotiator Ali Barghadikani also stated that Tehran's two proposed drafts cannot be rejected.
Although Iran's lead negotiator Ali Barghadikani said the Islamic Republic believes in discussions and is optimistic about the potential consequences, with Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has accused Iran of nuclear blackmail on the day of the talks. Iran has condemned Israel's bid to halt the Vienna negotiations, warning the parties in Vienna not to be swayed by Israeli efforts to poison the negotiations.
In an interview with the Doha-based Al Jazeera network on Friday, Iran's top negotiator Ali Barghadikani stated that external players, particularly Zionists, are making major attempts to obstruct and disrupt the process of discussions between Iran and the P4+1 group of nations in Vienna. Right on the eve of the negotiations, Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett alleged that the regime is very worried about the readiness to remove the sanctions. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman slammed the Israeli regime, saying Tel Aviv despises dialogue, since its genesis is based on war, tension, and terror. Said Khatibzadeh noted that the delegates in Vienna won't take instruction from the Israeli prime minister. Naftali Bennett has accused Tehran of carrying out, quote, nuclear blackmail as a negotiation tactic and urged concrete measures against Tehran. This followed the Israeli foreign minister's visit to the UK and France to ensure that banking sanctions against Iran will stand. Tehran has warned the parties in Vienna not to be influenced by Israeli attempts to poison the talks.
But they are always worried about being abandoned. And of course, the threats they make against Iran are utterly empty, except in the sense that they count on or they rely on the fact that were there to be a serious conflict between the Israeli colony and Iran, the US would rush to back them up. But they're very worried that might not happen.
The US administration of President Joe Biden had said it was willing to compensate for Trump's mistake and rejoin the deal, but it has retained the sanctions as leverage. Iran says it won't settle for anything less than the removal of all U.S. sanctions in a verifiable manner. It also wants guarantees that the U.S. would not abandon the agreement again.
The Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council says durable peace and security can only be achieved through continuous dialogue and cooperation among regional countries. Ali Shamkhani made the remark in a meeting with the UAE National Security Advisor in Tehran. He said that friendly relations and economic transactions with neighbors are Iran's top priority in foreign policy. Shamkhani noted that diplomacy and communication should replace military approaches in the region. He expressed hope that the visit by the Emirati official opens a new chapter in bilateral relations and paves the way for the expansion of relations. For his part, Sheikh Tahnoun bin Zayed Al Nahyan said that ties with Iran is among the UAE's top priorities. He called for the removal of obstacles in the way of cooperation in various economic sectors. The top Emirati official has also met with the Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi as part of his one-day visit. Sudanese police clashed with thousands of protesters holding yet another rally in the capital Khartoum to denounce the October coup and a new military-dominated government. Police used tear gas to disperse the crowd who had gathered near the presidential palace, carrying national flags and chanting slogans like "No to military rule." The protesters also denounced a recent deal that saw Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok reinstated after his ouster. Critics accused Hamdok of betrayal. Pro-democracy activists are opposed to any deal with the military, citing its deadly crackdown on protests. Sudan's top general seized power and detained civilian leaders, including Hamdok. But international condemnation and mass protests forced the military to bring back a transitional government. About 45 people have been killed in crackdowns and protests over the past 2 months. Several European countries are taking extra measures to stem the surge of in COVID-19 infections amid concerns over the new Omicron variant. Italy has tightened curbs on the people still not vaccinated, limiting their access to an array of places and services. The rise in COVID cases in recent weeks has also prompted authorities to make health pass obligatory for all public transport. In Germany, a nationwide lockdown has already started for the unvaccinated citizens. The government is also planning to make jabs compulsory in 2022. Elsewhere in Europe, Poland is set to announce a new package of pandemic restrictions this week in response to Omicron and how to handle the Christmas holidays. Polish Health Ministry reported over 13,000 new coronavirus cases on Monday. A new report suggests that the global military spending has been on the rise, with the world's biggest weapons manufacturers recording a growth in their profits for a sixth straight year. The report published by the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute says top 100 weapons manufacturers sold a record of over $530 billion worth of arms in 2020 alone. That is a 1.3% rise compared to the previous year. The top five manufacturers are all from the United States, including Lockheed Martin, which ranks first. Britain's BAE Systems is on the sixth position and is the highest placed European firm, just ahead of three Chinese groups. The UN Human Rights Chief condemns the jail term given to Myanmar's deposed leader Aung San Suu Kyi, calling her trial a sham. In a statement, Michelle Bachelet also called for Suu Kyi's immediate release, warning that the conviction closes yet another door to political dialogue in Myanmar. She also reported the custody death of at least 175 people and the detention of more than 10,000 anti-coup activists in the Southeast Asian country. Earlier, a court sentenced Suu Kyi to 4 years in prison on charges of incitement and breaching coronavirus protocols. violating official secrets acts, corruption, and electoral fraud are other accusations the military has leveled against her. Suu Kyi, together with several other civilian leaders, was arrested on the day that the army took over the elected government in February. Belarus says it is planning to respond in kind to the recent bans imposed on its air industry by a number of Western countries. The Belarusian Foreign Ministry says that Minsk will impose retaliatory sanctions on air carriers from the EU and Britain. The ministry says that a ban is also expected on imports of certain goods from countries that have taken anti-Belarusian measures. The EU has blacklisted a Belarusian state-run airline in a move the bloc coordinated with the U.S., the U.K., and Canada. They've accused Minsk of fomenting the migrant crisis to destabilize European states. Belarus denies the allegations. In recent months, thousands of migrants from West Asia have traveled to Belarus in hopes of making their way deeper into the EU through Poland. But Poland and Lithuania are pushing them back, leaving them behind barbed wires and freezing temperatures. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Jeremy Farrar, British director of Wellcome Trust, who stepped down as a UK government scientific advisor recently, has suggested emergence of Omicron variant means pandemic is far from over. We'll prepare for you an article written jointly by Michael Savage and Robin McKee. The piece is titled Top Scientist Warns UK's Progress on COVID Now Squandered. One of Britain's most senior scientific figures has warned the emergence of the Omicron variant shows that the world is closer to the start of the pandemic than the end, as he lamented a lack of political leadership over COVID. Sir Jeremy Farrar, the director of the Wellcome Trust, who stepped down as a UK government scientific advisor recently, said the progress in combating COVID-19 since its emergence was being squandered. Writing in The Observer, he said rich countries had been taking a very blinkered domestic focus, lulled into thinking that the worst of the pandemic was behind us. He said whilst he was cautiously hopeful that current vaccines would protect against severe illness from Omicron, that may not be true for future variants of the virus. He writes, the longer this virus continues to spread in largely unvaccinated populations globally, the more likely it is that a variant that can overcome our vaccines and treatments will emerge. If that happens, we could be close to square one. Sir Jeremy Farrar added, this political drift and lack of leadership is prolonging the pandemic for everyone, with governments unwilling to really address inequitable access to the vaccines, tests and treatment. There have been wonderful speeches, warm words, but not the actions needed to ensure fair access to what we know works and would bring the pandemic to a close. He added that the urgent action needed had not changed. Wearing face masks indoors, increasing testing, social distancing, isolating if positive, with support to do so, and vaccination will all help to drive down transmission and protect against this illness. Jeremy Farrar's intervention came as a major charity raised concerns about the UK government's booster jab campaign, which it sees as the best current method of combating the virus. Caroline Abrahams, charity director at Age UK, said the programme was frankly in a mess. She said, "It's way behind where it should be, and to hear recently that as many as 1 in 5 care home residents have not yet had their booster jabs was nothing short of alarming." She spoke out after some targets for general practitioners were suspended to allow them to concentrate on administering the jabs. Routine health checks for the over 75s and for new patients may be deferred under the new guidance. Caroline Abrahams says, "Against this context, we agree that the top priority now is to turbocharge the booster program to ensure as many older and vulnerable people as possible get their jabs, and fast," adding, "In the end, this situation is another demonstration of how underpowered our GP system has become. Unless and until we invest more heavily in it, we will continue to see these hard choices arising whenever a crisis comes along. And that's certainly not in anyone's interest, least of all older people's." Britain's Health Secretary Sajid Javid called on all eligible people to have a booster shot before spending time with family this Christmas. He said, "It's absolutely crucial that everybody who's eligible gets their booster jab to top up their immunity before spending time with loved ones." He added, "While our scientists learn more about the new Omicron variant, we need to do everything we can to strengthen our defenses, and vaccines are the best way to do that." Saturday, 4th of December, No. 10 Downing Street announced that it was introducing pre-departure tests for people travelling to the United Kingdom. From 4 a.m. local time on Tuesday, 7th of December, travellers will have to complete a lateral flow or PCR test 48 hours before entering the country. Nigeria has been added to the red list. And from 4 a.m. local time on Monday, 6th of December, arrivals will have to quarantine in hotels. Officials said the moves came as evidence emerged that the Omicron strain had been reported in more than 40 countries, with apparent community transmission in places such as Norway. They also said that there was evidence that the incubation period was shorter than for other variants of the virus. Labour had been pushing for the introduction of the tests. A Downing Street source said that new evidence about the spread of the variant and its characteristics had driven the decision. "It will cause further frustration for the travel industry, which has been heavily affected by COVID restrictions. The sudden spread of the Omicron variant has dismayed many scientists." Professor Francois Balou of University College London said, "What has really surprised me has been the rapidity of the increase in numbers of cases being reported from South Africa. Cases are doubling at a rate I have never seen before. It is very worrying." Early estimates have suggested this rise is being driven by the fact that the Omicron variant can infect between 3 and 6 times as many people as the Delta variant over the same time period. "It is an alarming figure that has been balanced by early reports which have suggested the variant is, at present, less likely to lead to hospitalization." However, scientists recently warned caution should be taken with such data. Professor Roland Keogh of Edinburgh University said, "It is already a tight situation. Even if Omicron variant is less likely to cause severe illness, it may still cause more hospitalizations and put further strain on the National Health Service, because so many more people will become infected." There is also evidence that more than 1 in 4 or 27% of British workers would turn up for work with symptoms of the Omicron variant because they needed the money, including 23% of those whose job puts them at increased risk of infection. Also, according to opinion polls for the Royal Society for Arts, Manufacturers and Commerce, RSA, 16% of workers say they would be able to work from home but are not allowed to by their employers. Just 31% say they would get support from their employer beyond statutory sick pay. Anthony Painter, the Royal Society for Arts, Manufacturers and Commerce's chief research officer, said, "To secure the economic recovery, workers must be economically secure. In the short term, we need to see an auto-furlough system and more generous sick pay. But long term, both the Conservatives and Labour must spell out how they will address the deep economic insecurity COVID has only exposed." On Saturday, 4th of December, we saw further demonstrations in Europe against various government coronavirus measures. In Austria, the first country in the European Union to announce that it is to make vaccination against COVID mandatory, more than 40,000 people joined a protest in Vienna. The Dutch city of Utrecht saw several thousand demonstrate against restrictions that were introduced recently. The Dutch protesters carried banners reading "Medical Freedom Now." Many protesters denounced what they see as increasing pressure from the Dutch government to get vaccinated if they want to participate in regular society. In Frankfurt, Germany, police broke up a demonstration of several hundred people for failing to wear face masks or maintaining social distancing, using batons and pepper spray after they were attacked by a group of protesters. In Berlin, Germany, small groups gathered to protest after a large demonstration was banned.
Economic divide.
In an unprecedented move, the U.S. has announced that it will release millions of barrels of oil from its reserves. But this move can backfire. Meanwhile, the U.S. President Joe Biden says there's enough petroleum to reduce the amount purchased from Iran. Hi, I'm Kavit Ahwai. Stay tuned as we dive into the world of oil and the controversies surrounding it. Coming up, the U.S. tapping into its oil reserves to release 50 million barrels. So are a handful of other countries like China, India, and Japan. The reason? To tame inflation. But will it work? We will also take a look at OPEC, standing up to the U.S. and the rest of the world, rejecting the increase in production, saying that 400,000 barrels per day will suffice, an increase monthly. Is the U.S. and Saudi Arabia on a collision course over this matter? And finally, Iran's oil production. The world, and the U.S. in particular, shooting itself in the foot. It can help with the oil shortage. This U.S. anti-Iran obsession affecting the rest of the world's economies.
The United States desperate to tame the price of oil. U.S. gasoline prices risen to a seven-year high. Average price, $3.42 per gallon. Naturally, the U.S. looked to OPEC Plus to increase production. But it got the cold shoulder, especially from Saudi Arabia.
I think Japan, India, the U.S. are seeking additional volumes. Am I correct? With regard to the U.S., yes, we've been having discussions at all levels.
OPEC would not open its taps as much as the U.S. and other big consumer nations wanted. A modest 400,000 barrels a day each month, their commitment.
So, yes, we will keep the 400 on a monthly basis. We will review in December. We kept our window open for review.
The U.S. was now in panic mode, so it did what should be done in an emergency situation. The release of 50 million barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, SPR, to lower oil prices, to be done in parallel with other major energy-consuming nations like China, India, the UK, Japan, and South Korea.
Now that the U.S. has decided to release 50 million barrels from its SPR, and there will be more coming from other countries, the question is, OPEC has basically planned to increase production by 400,000 barrels a day each month. They've been doing this for quite some time, and they plan to continue it into the new year. But this was seen as not nearly enough supply by the Biden administration, also by India and Japan. The question is, will OPEC react negatively to the SPR release and decide to curb its planned increases? And all the indications we're getting right now say no, that OPEC is planning to continue with its moderate increases in production.
So, what a position for the U.S. to be in. The U.S. president in particular is feeling the heat. It has low approval ratings on the one hand, and then you got inflation on the other hand, which could threaten the Democratic Party's chances for the 2022 midterms, and not to mention the whole presidency if things continue down this path for the U.S. Anyways, let's take a look at some social media posts in this segment. We're going to take a look at this particular one, which concerns the U.S. announcement that it will release 50 million barrels of oil from its reserves. It came from a reliable source, oilprice.com, which said President Biden's attempt to coordinate a crude release from major importers around the world has had a limited impact on oil prices and is likely to send prices even higher in the future. Notice two key unfavorable effects: limited impact on oil, and then for it to send prices higher. Okay, let's find out if we can get an answer to this from Sergiro Takeshita, professor of management and information at the University of Shizuoka. He specializes in comparative governance and international affairs. Well, Sergiro, welcome. Looking at this move by the handful of countries, which includes the U.S., for the release of oil from their reserves, the interesting thing about this is when the announcement was made, the price of oil actually increased as a result of this. Why did that happen, even though we're looking at the fact that oil is going to come into the market?
Well, actually, the market, especially the financial market, tend to basically move on expectation and not always the actual announcement that's been made. And when we had the announcement, it was in many cases much lower than many had anticipated. Meaning that, you know, many people felt that the oil prices will remain high or even rise from there. Of course, that is before the new variant type of COVID-19 really, you know, became the big news.
Based on what our guest there said, let's take a look at some other tweets that perhaps can enlighten us more. Fresh off the Glasgow COP26 summit, this particular tweet actually fits in nicely to whether there's a real push for green energy. It said the Biden administration is not shutting down oil production and then tapping into our strategic oil reserves because they are stupid. It is intentional. The tweet said that they are manufacturing an oil crisis to push us to green energy. They don't care about you. In fact, they hate you. All right, hate is a strong word. But meanwhile, there is a solution that is staring the U.S. and the world right in their faces, particularly the U.S. President Joe Biden, and that is Iran. Biden officials have warned the Saudis for weeks that U.S. will act if OPEC doesn't, but the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, KSA, has stood up firm in refusing to increase output and has priced it wrongly in the view of the U.S. officials. The possibility that the U.S. reaches a nuclear deal with Iran and lifts sanctions on oil. Well, this is while the U.S. president made an outrageous claim just recently, which goes against the reality that is out there, that there's a shortage of oil and gas. He said that consistent with prior determinations, there is sufficient supply of petroleum and petroleum products from countries other than Iran to permit a significant reduction in the volume of petroleum and petroleum products purchased from Iran by or through foreign financial institutions. Okay, let's bring in Tom O'Sullivan. He is a director at Matthias, is an energy consulting firm who joins us here. Welcome, Tom. So when you take a look at how the world is suffering from an energy crunch, and in particular from a lack of oil production, which the prices of oil have shot up, and therefore you're looking at inflation, at least one of the reasons for inflation to have broken out, why is it then that the U.S. in particular and other countries are shooting themselves in the foot and not allowing oil to come into the market? Yes, I know. U.S. sanctions are the reason.
Well, of course, you know, the discussions around the JCPOA are still going on, and I guess, you know, the Americans will be speaking to the Iranians, if I'm not mistaken, later this week. So I think on the sanctions and, you know, the Iranian situation, I think it very much depends on how the negotiations go over the next several days.
It's time now for our info news section of the program, economic news from around the world, which caught our attention from this past week. Food prices, they are about to soar. That's the grim assessment. The reason? A worldwide shortage of nitrogen fertilizer. Believe it or not, this time around, this is what's going to affect next year's food prices. Now, the global prices of nitrogen fertilizer are at their highest levels in over a decade. The crop nutrient sales amounted to $53 billion last year. Prices are at least 80% higher so far this year. That's according to Argus Media. So obviously, food prices are going to go up naturally as a result. On to electricity availability. That's the next topic of our next piece. It's more of an information piece of news, actually, more than anything else. I mean, did you know that 1 billion people lack access to electricity worldwide? The entry that caught our attention went on to say that solar power can help. It used Africa as an example, that many African countries simply lack transmission infrastructure to accommodate solar and wind installations. So somebody should get on the ball and make sure that the infrastructure to provide the access is done. Next up, U.S. wage inequality. Another example of it, this time at a franchise in the U.S. It's called the Dollar Tree. The store is that at this point used to sell their items for a dollar. They can no longer do that. The Dollar Tree CEO, however, made $10 million last year and has blamed inflation for the price hike of the items to $1.25. Dollar Tree made over $1 billion in sales, giving its CEO over $10 million and paying workers as little as $8.32 an hour. All right, finally, Canada's children's poverty is our final topic, where there was a grim assessment made of children's poverty in that country. More than 1.3 million Canadian children, or 17.7%, live in poverty. That's according to an annual report that was issued by the Campaign 2000. It said that is a pretty significant number of kids who are suffering from harm and effects of missing meals, not having the right kinds of clothes, and parents who are working really long hours.
Listening to Economic Divide. This series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to our in-depth section. It's worth taking a deep look at the fragile and dangerous predicament that the U.S. is in. After all, releasing emergency oil reserves is not something that can be taken lightly. First, there's the fact that the United States uses more gasoline than any other nation in the world. The figures are really astounding. Just in the year 2020, about 123.73 billion gallons, or about 2.95 billion barrels of finished motor gasoline were consumed in the U.S. That averages to about 338 million gallons per day, which translates to about 8.05 million barrels per day. Let me say that again, 8.05 million barrels per day. And that's on the downside due to coronavirus. So, why is the U.S. coming up short when it comes to gasoline? Why is there an increase in the price of gasoline? Well, when it comes to the price of gasoline, this is the story as of today, November 26th. You're looking at the average price that used to be $2.11, but now it's coming in at $3.40. That is an increase of 61% over 12 months. No wonder why Americans are alarmed. Well, did you ever think about how the gasoline that you pump into your cars is actually not pure gasoline? In other words, do you know what goes into the price of gasoline? Well, here it is. The price of crude, which amounts to more than half of the cost, roughly 50%. That price is largely determined by supply and demand worldwide. Then you're looking at things like ethanol and other additives, 10% and 5% respectively. And then things like distribution and marketing, which come in at around 18%. And then at the top there, you see taxes. In the U.S., it's roughly about 17% of the cost. The federal gasoline tax is actually 18 cents, while the average taxes and fees per state in the U.S. is 30 cents. What would the end of the year upon the United States, what is it looking at? Well, you're looking at travel holidays. 48.3 million people actually hit the roads from Thanksgiving to the Christmas holidays, including New Year. So as a result, gasoline prices at the pump will increase dramatically. Now a look at the release from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Yes, U.S. announced that it would release close to or at 50 million barrels, the estimated release amount. And this is going to be a combination of a loan and a sale. In other words, the 50 million barrels that comes from the SPR is going to be set out there, whether it's a loan or a sale, to the different distributors. However, many market experts have said that this will not have a sustained effect on oil prices. And guess what? They were right. The international oil prices rose significantly after the announcement that was made by the U.S. All right, let's get a breakdown on this and bring in Tom Sullivan. He's a director at Matthias Energy Consulting firm who rejoins us here. Well, Tom, what are we looking at when it comes to the U.S. to releasing these 50 million barrels of oil? I mean, along with other countries, it's done that. It's going to affect the price of oil somewhat. Your opinion matters here. OPEC doesn't like that. At the same time, when the announcements were made, prices did go up. So can you break this down for us?
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, sir. So I think, obviously, yes, higher oil prices are causing a major problem for President Biden in the United States. First of all, the prices at the gasoline and the prices at the pump in the gasoline stations in the United States. And as you said, also the higher inflation costs. So I think, obviously, the United States felt some pressure to actually ask all of its allies, countries, and of course China as well, to release reserves. And Japan has done that and has agreed to do that. And of course South Korea in this time zone also has agreed to do that. But I think also OPEC, because of the sustained period of low oil prices, I think were a little reluctant to increase production too much. Gavi, so I think that's a little bit of background from my perspective in this time zone.
Well, thank you for that, Tom. Well, let's bring in Sergira Takeshita. He rejoins us. He's a professor of management and information at the University of Shizuoka. Sergira, tell us your take on why the U.S. decided to make this move. Obviously, it felt the pressure because of inflation along with other nations. At the same time, OPEC does not like that. And then you have what should have been a price decrease, but yet the price increased.
Well, I think one of the big problems that we're facing, as you just noted, is the fear of inflation, which has become pretty evident, not only through the high oil prices, but also due to the pent-up demand that's really kicking in many of the countries. Now, the aim of OPEC or OPEC Plus is basically to sustain high price, particularly for the likes of Saudi Arabia. Now, that said, organizations like OPEC tend to be very wide in variations. You have one of the richest and also one of the poorest countries in the world. The only similarity here is the fact that they produce oil. But, you know, some go for the higher price, some just go for the cash that they can get a hold on. So it's a very difficult organization, in my opinion, to sustain, you know, an opinion. But here, I think it's very clear that the leader, Saudi Arabia, obviously wants to sustain the high price.
What can the world do to increase oil and gas availability and in turn decrease the energy crunch that it finds itself in? OPEC Plus has not been that accommodating on this issue, but there is one solution. Get oil and gas producing countries into the mix. The largest oil producing countries in the world, numbers 1 and 3, namely Venezuela and Iran. Their proven oil reserves are astronomical. The problem? Both are under U.S. sanctions. And because of these sanctions, the rest of the world is suffering, even the U.S. itself. In terms of Iran, it is the fifth largest crude oil producer in OPEC in 2020. At the end of 2020, Iran accounted for 25% of oil reserves in West Asia and for 12% in the world. The EIA assesses that Iran's production could return to full capacity at around 4 million barrels per day if the United States lifts oil sector sanctions.
With the announcement of the U.S. President Joe Biden that it, along with some other countries, will release their oil reserves into markets, a clash is now in the making between the U.S. and world's top oil producers, namely OPEC. First, let's set the stage. At stake is the price of the world's most important commodity, namely oil. Why is this happening? Politicians and central bankers, content with the strongest inflationary surge in more than a decade. What is OPEC saying about all of this? First, it's not too happy about the release of U.S. oil reserves, and this is how they have responded, which sounds like a threat in some ways. OPEC delegates said the release of millions of barrels from the inventories of their biggest customers is unjustified by current market conditions, and the group may have to reconsider plans to add more oil production when they meet next week.
Everybody's sure of this. OPEC is going to fight back by simply adjusting their production, okay? So they can drive the price right back up by failing to increase production as much as perhaps they would have otherwise.
The problem that OPEC sees here is the price of oil, and who controls it and sets it has a precedent. OPEC believes that it should determine what the price of oil should be based on the demand and conditions that affect the price of the precious commodity. But herein lies the problem. The U.S. believes that OPEC should increase production to offset the price and lower it. But OPEC disagrees.
Why did we do the 400? Keep in mind, I think you guys have a good memory, you know. Out of sheer responsibility, we brought an advancement to the whole 5.8. Let's not forget, the 5.8 million was out there to be dealt with beginning of May 22. Out of sheer responsibility, we brought the whole thing earlier, and that's why we have signed up to the July agreement, 18th of July agreement, where we will bring the 400.
One of the fallouts from this is the Saudi-U.S. relationship. The strained relationship between Washington and Riyadh is showing itself. This has been especially noticeable with the way Joe Biden views or doesn't view Mohammed bin Salman.
there are headlines like these, which imply the high oil price is driven by Mohammed bin Salman and the uncozy relationship, or lack of it, that exists between him and the US President Joe Biden. One headline read, "The main driver of inflation is a murderous maniac in Riyadh. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman is enacting revenge on Democrats in general and President Joe Biden specifically for the party's increasingly standoffish attitude toward the kingdom by driving up energy prices and fueling the global inflation." But there is an important fact that the US president is not facing or fails to realize when it comes to oil producers. That is how US has made enemies out of major oil producing countries through its failed policies. We told you about its relationship with Saudi Arabia Crown Prince. Then comes Russia and the Russian President Vladimir Putin. Well, the US is doing everything it can to corner Russia, forgetting Russia is the number two producer of oil in the world. And here's something many don't realize. Russia is supplying more oil to the US than any other, aside from Canada. Aside from that estranged relationship, there is Iran. The US has also failed there, preventing through sanctions Iranian oil from flowing into the market. Word of advice to the US president, shutting your doors on major oil producers is not a good idea. Something the US is now suffering from. That does it for this segment of the program. I really look forward to any comments from you. Our links and addresses are on your screens now. From me, Mahdi, it's goodbye until next week.
The future price of oil in the near and in the short term is actually something that's in the uncharted territory. It's hard to gauge what's going to happen. Now, remember when oil went into negative territory when the pandemic first hit? You couldn't even give the oil away for free. There was no storage space for it. Well, those days are gone. And with a new coronavirus strain, if it ravages the world economically, there will be an economic downturn as a result, which means demand will drop. But this could be an uneven phenomenon in the way that it's going to unfold. However, you can be sure that OPEC is going to make sure that it doesn't take a hit like last time around. That does it for this edition of the program. For me, Kavit Hathaway and the entire team, it's goodbye until next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and IranSat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastorday.com/en. And now, you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.